Just by way of introduction, I want to make a comment on the Christian church, because the Christian church and the Christian faith is under huge and powerful attack. There are many writers, many thinkers, all kinds of people that call themselves atheists. The label tends to be neo-atheists, a new atheistic move. There's the argument that all religion is evil, and there's the catchphrase, religion poisons everything. And wherever the churches or believers are, it only causes harm. Well, it's not true, but there is truth in it. That's part of the problem, isn't it? That throughout history, there are times when you can point to the behavior of the church and the behavior of Christians that has not been helpful, that hasn't been a faithful representation of Christ or his good news. And so those things are easily laid hold of and used to just kind of write off everything about the Christian faith and the church. And it's a challenge to us as believers and as the church to seek to be faithful to who Christ is. On the other side, what's often ignored is that the Christian faith has brought great blessing in the world, great blessing in the Western world, great blessing in many countries. There are so many good things in our culture, institutions and ways of being and thinking and living that find their roots in the Christian faith, that in the argument and the pushback against the church, that tends to be ignored. My point is simply to say, and you may be someone who's wondering about the Christian faith and hear those voices that talk about how bad the Christian church has been, and I just want to say, sometimes it has been. There is evidence for that. But not enough evidence to write the whole Christian faith off. And I think the most important thing to do, if we're to understand the great questions of life and to seek out meaningful answers, not necessarily to look at the surface things or at the surface argument, but to do what good students should always do and go back to the original source of something. Go back to the original sources. What is the original source of the Christian faith? It's Jesus Christ. It is the person of Jesus Christ. And if we go back to Jesus and begin to simply investigate him, read about him, think about him, ask questions about him, I guarantee that you will find the person of Jesus Christ profoundly compelling, utterly compelling. There is nobody like him. So again, push aside all the noise, push aside all the superficial things. Look at who Jesus is. That's, you know, we've got this cute little motto here, learning life with Jesus. It might be cute, but it's very important. How do we learn and understand life? It's with Christ. It's going back to who Christ is. What's revealed in him? How we understand life and ourselves and the future and eternity all through the lens of the Lord Jesus Christ. The more you look at Jesus Christ, it is difficult to see how people could have invented such a person. We couldn't invent someone this glorious. We make up all kinds of fantastical things, but we couldn't make this one up. He is beyond fiction. He is real. That's why I wanted to look at this little story again with you, because it just shows us Jesus, draws us to Christ, and shows us a compelling person. It's a very simple story, isn't it? If you listen to the reading, there's a man who has leprosy. He hears about Jesus. He comes to Jesus. He begs him with those words, "If you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus is moved in his heart, he touches him, and he says, "I'm willing, be clean." Very simple story. But oh, the depths of what it tells us about Christ. And to understand that, we need to step back and take a look at the man who comes to him, the man called the leper, who has a crisis in his life. What is the crisis? What does it really mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. It's He has a leprosy, as you know, in the Bible, could be used to cover all kinds of skin diseases. They didn't live in an age where we had accurate medical diagnosis and accurate medical treatment for the thing that we call leprosy. It was a skin condition. The word leprosy could be used to cover various skin conditions. The one that we particularly know as leprosy, along with it, there's sort of growths that come on the body, but also there's a loss of sensation. So you end up not feeling certain pain. So you don't feel heat, for example, and so then you burn yourself, but you don't feel it. And so you can end up unwittingly just damaging your body in all kinds of ways. That's where you get that kind of image of someone all wrapped up in bandages, missing fingers. And, you know, that's very real and physically horrendous when there was no treatment for it. Nobody knew what to do about it. And so, you know, already someone who's physically marred and unattractive feels shut off and isolated. But then there's a sort of a social impact of that. It's very important to understand the background of leprosy in the Old Testament culture. In the Old Testament culture, the priest, who was the, kind of a leading figure in the community, had an important role in this regard. And if someone had particular ailments or conditions, they would have to go to the priest. And the priest would examine those conditions and make a declaration about them. He wasn't a doctor, he couldn't treat them, but he could make a declaration. And the declaration in the Old Testament after examination was that this person was either clean or unclean. And if the priest examined something like leprosy and it was clear that this is what it was, he would make a declaration that you're unclean. Now, we can't really relate to that, can we? But it was hugely significant in that culture. And let me just give you one reference from the book of Leviticus. Chapters 13 and 14 of Leviticus kind of spell out this whole procedure. And in verses 45 and 46, this kind of sums up what the priest would have to do. It says there that the leprous person who has the disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head hang loose. And he shall cover his upper lip and cry out, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean, he shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. So now you get this picture here. I think I've got this terrible thing. So I go to the priest and the priest says it's unclean. That means now socially he is cut off. And so if he comes near people, he has to put his hand over his mouth and say, unclean, unclean. In other words, saying, I'm unclean, keep away from me. Can you imagine the shame? And people would have to stay away. And one of the reasons why they would have to stay away was because, according to Old Testament law, if you touched somebody who had been declared unclean, then you became unclean. You were declared unclean. You see the pitiable sense of rejection here. It's more than that. It's more than just a social rejection and being cut off. It's religious as well, because such a person, they're declared unclean in the sense of being unclean in the presence of God, and they cannot come to worship, they cannot come into the temple, they cannot be where other people are, and they cannot be in the presence of God. Let me give you another reference. In 2 Chronicles 26, verses 20 and 21, we read, one of the kings became leprous. And it said, and Azariah, the chief priest, and all the priests looked at him, and behold, he was leprous in his forehead. And they rushed him out quickly, and he himself hurried to go out because the Lord had struck him. And King Uzziah was a leper to the day of his death, and being a leper, lived in a separate house, for he was excluded from the house of the Lord. You see, there's a couple of things going on there. This man in the New Testament who has leprosy, people understand He's been declared unclean. He's cut off. He's shut off. He knows that himself, but he also has this sense that he's cut off from the presence of God. And that, like King Uzziah, the skin disease could even itself be a judgment of God on him. And so it has this spiritual impact as well, that not only is he despised and rejected by people, but perhaps also of God, that it could be a judgment for sin. That's a lot to go through, but I just want you to get the sense of where this man is at and what he's struggling with and what he's feeling. See, because there are times when we, as fallen, broken, sinful humans, will feel exactly the same. Unclean. Shut off and cut off from others. Shut off and cut off from the presence of God himself. Perhaps feeling like we're under the judgment of God. The rabbis, the teachers of that day, saw leprosy as such a serious thing that they believed the healing of leprosy was as difficult as raising the dead. That only God could do it. If you look at 2 Kings 5, 7, there's a Syrian called Naaman who has leprosy, and he asks help from Israel, and there's a quote there where it's like, does he think I'm God that I can heal leprosy? And the teachers in the New Testament began to take that as really it's impossible to heal. Only God could do it. It's like raising the dead. But this is where we see the glory of Jesus Christ. This man comes to Jesus in all of this need, and he has only one plea. He says, if you will, you can make me clean. I love the way he asked that question. I don't know how he knew to ask the question that way. He didn't say, if you are able. He knew somehow that this man was able to do what nobody else could do. He was able to do what God could do. But do you notice what he asked? Not, are you able? He said, are you willing? I know you can do it, but will you do it for me? In all my brokenness and need, will you come near to me? He doesn't say, it's a very important contrast here, you see, between Jesus and the priests. The priests could not do anything about leprosy. They could not do anything about the skin disease. They could not make somebody clean. They could only declare what already was. If somebody had leprosy and they saw that, they would declare them to be unclean. If somebody recovered, they would look at that and declare them to be clean. But the priest had no power to make the change. They could only declare what was. But look at Jesus. When he says, if you will, you can make me clean, it says he was moved with pity. Moved with pity. He saw the man's need, and it moved his heart. He stretched out his hand and he touched him and said, I am willing. Be clean. Jesus didn't declare him clean. Jesus made him clean. Now imagine, there's a three words in here that just move my heart enormously. And that's a very rich three words. It's the three words, and touched him. That's why I talked a lot about leprosy before, and the fact that if someone is declared unclean, no one can touch them because they become unclean and no one would touch them. They were even deprived of the sense of human touch. But Jesus touched him. Imagine what that meant. See what it tells us about Jesus? Jesus is here. Jesus is here to push back the curse. Jesus is here to restore the broken life. And he enters into that. And he shows the man the pity and the compassion that he needs. Remember, I said, the rabbi said that curing a leper is like raising the dead, and only God could do it. And right here is God doing it in the person of Jesus. He is God the Son, come to overthrow the reign of Satan, to rescue us and make us fit for dwelling with God. You see, by taking away his leprosy, he suddenly takes away all the rejection. He restores him physically and socially and religiously and spiritually. That's why there's a real act of kindness here, something that might seem confusing. In verse 44, he said, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them." Now, understanding that Old Testament background of the role of the priest in this whole leprosy thing, Jesus, as another act of compassion, was saying, by going to the priest would look at him and see what had happened and say, "You're clean." It was a public, authoritative declaration that he was completely restored to all that had been lost. And Jesus wanted him to hear those words of restoration from the priest. But also, Jesus was sending the man as a witness to the priests. Because when they looked at him and saw that something had happened that only God could do, they would begin to understand that in Jesus, God had come to rescue us. Well, again, there's a compelling lesson in all of this for you and I. When we think about the leper and the state he was in, it sounds familiar. It sounds like me, and it may sound like you. You and I have a disease called sin. He had a disease called leprosy. We have a deep disease called sin. This thing in our heart that cuts us off from God. It makes us so often unfit for fellowship with others. It makes us unfit for relationship with God. It fills us with shame, and we want to hold our hands over our mouths and say, "Unclean, unclean, unclean." Maybe you know that. Maybe sometimes you feel it very deeply. And the law of God reveals that to us. God's standard for our lives, the standard of God that tells us how we can be right with him, just examines our hearts and constantly tells us we're unclean. The law of God is like the priest. It examines us. And it sees what's wrong, and it tells us that we are unclean. But the law of God, like the priest, cannot do anything to change that. No matter how hard we try or how hard we work, if we try to obey the law of God to the nth degree, we cannot do it. We cannot use the law to make ourselves clean. The law can only tell us we are unclean. As the book of Romans says, we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world may be held accountable to God. For by works of the law, no human being will be justified in his sight, since through the law comes the knowledge of sin. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. The law of God, like the priest, examines us and says, unclean. And like Isaiah in that great chapter, Isaiah 6, we stand in the presence of the perfect God and we feel our shame and we say, "Woe is me, for I am undone. I live among a people of unclean lips and my lips are unclean." What's to be done? What's to be done, you see? And then we come. We're given this permission and this invitation to cry out to Jesus and say, "If you will, you can make me clean." See, only God can do it. We cry, "If you will, you can make me clean." We cry, "Are you willing?" And the answer through the ages from this passage is, "I am willing. Be clean." You see, again, let me bring you back to those three precious words, "And he touched him." In that touch, Jesus risked becoming unclean. But you see, what he was doing was, he was actually becoming unclean. That touch was a declaration of the willingness of Jesus Christ to become what that person was. A person judged and condemned by the law so that he could have what Jesus was. Cleanness, rightness, wholeness. That simple touch of the hand of Jesus Christ is a profound picture of the gospel. You see, that he identified so completely with us in all our sin and all our shame that he set us free from it. At the cross, you see, at the very cross, he became, as it were, unclean for us. He became the sinner in our place. He took what we deserve upon himself. In the cross is the hand touching the leper. He never became unclean. He never became a sinner, but he was treated as though he were. He became a man under the condemnation of the law. Jesus on the cross became an outcast like the leper, outcast from God and from people, despised and rejected, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. He suffered the physical impact of our sin. He suffered the social impact of our sin. He suffered the religious and spiritual consequences of our shame and our sin, even though he alone was sinless and clean and he did not deserve it. He was crucified outside the camp, cut off from God. He suffered it all under God in our place, on our behalf, to make us clean. John Calvin says, "Nor did he only stretch out his arm to us, but he descended from heaven even to hell and yet contracted no stain from it, but retaining his innocence, took away all our impurities and sprinkled us with his holiness. By his word alone he might have healed the leper." See that? By his word alone he might have healed the leper, but he applied at the same time the touch of his hand to express the feeling of compassion. Nor ought this to excite our wonder, since he chose to take upon him our flesh that he might cleanse us from our sins. The stretching out of his hand was therefore an expression and token of infinite grace and goodness. Calvin says, "What we lazily read and coldly pass by cannot be duly weighed without great astonishment." You see, here is us being loved. 2 Corinthians 5:21 said, "God made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God." You know, there's a little illustration of this just this last week. Yesterday, I think I got a letter in the mail. You know, you get a windowed letter and you think, I don't know who this is from. This could cost me money. And I opened it up and guess what it was? It was a speeding fine. And so I thought, okay, I deserve this. And then I looked closely and more closely, and can you imagine my delight to discover it wasn't even me? It wasn't even my car. They've sent a fine to me for someone else in some other car that I have no idea who it is. So they've made a clerical error. You'll be relieved to hear. But you see, I read that and I thought, I deserve this. And then my delight when I realized it was talking about someone else. But that's the gospel. I deserve everlasting punishment, but the gospel says it's fallen on someone else. And I'm clean. And I can go free. And I can know God. And I can be in heaven. This is for you this morning. You may feel a great sense of sin and shame and need, but no matter how great, Jesus says, "I am willing. Be clean." He does not throw his hands up in disgust. He does not turn away from us. He pursues us and he touches us and he begins the work of restoring our broken humanity. Is not Jesus Christ compelling? And here's the last thought, you see. If he has so loved us as he loved that man that day, was willing to walk up to him and put his hand upon him in all his uncleanness, and all his shame. If he's loved you and I like that, then he calls us to love others just like that. Our culture is filled with needy hearts and broken lives, the ravages of sin and shame. And he calls us not to stand afar off, but to go in his name and touch the lives of broken people for his sake. Sin is the root, and Jesus is the answer. At the Lord's Supper this morning, as we come to this simple table, this simple meal of bread and wine, let me just make this point for you, that the bread and the wine say something. They say this. They say, I have touched you. In all your sin and shame, I did not withhold my hand from you, but I became as you are to bear away all your sin and shame, and it is gone. The high priest, Jesus Christ, looks at us and he declares us clean. The bread and the wine tells you that this morning. Jesus has made you clean. Believe it. Receive it. And live in the light of that grace. Let's pray.